The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Right now, get a free select tool when you buy the Craftsman V20 2-Pack Battery Kit. Whether it's the backyard, the bathroom, or beyond, Craftsman has the tools to help you power through and get the project done right. Because DIYing is unpredictable, but your tools shouldn't be. Shop Craftsman at Lowe's today. Valid through 7-9 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. Maximum initial battery voltage measured without a workload is 20 volts. Nominal voltage is 18.
On August 26, 1995, 23-year-old Heather Teague decided to head to a local beach to catch some sun. It was a nice day, she was on her summer break from college, she didn't have anywhere else she needed to be. The beach sounded like a good idea for the day. But someone else, some awful, awful man, had another idea in mind when he emerged from the woods behind her, grabbed her by the hair, and dragged her away. Despite there being around 500 people on the beach that day, despite somebody happening to witness the entire thing through a telescope, Heather has never been seen again, and no one has ever been convicted of her presumed murder. She was declared as legally dead in 2007. That's not to say there haven't been some very strong suspects in this case though, because there always have been, they just haven't been able to get them. 29 years on, Heather's family are still searching for answers, but most of all, they just want to find Heather. Her mum, Sarah, has said, "I know there's answers out there and I want to know where she is. I want to bring her home, even if it's just a piece of her." And that's what we're looking for today. If you live in Kentucky around Henderson County, pay extra close attention to this story. You never know who might have the tiny piece of the puzzle that might bring everything together here, that might finally bring Heather home. I went back and forth on this case for ages as to how to tell it because there's so much information to share in this story. The kind of like research jackpot is when the official police documents have been released and they're just out there on the internet for anyone to read. And that is the case here, the official documents are out there. It doesn't really happen very often in true crime, but when it does, it is kind of the best you can ask for. It means I don't have to rely on archived newspaper articles and documentaries, like this is all legit, straight from the horse's mouth. Although, of course, it doesn't necessarily mean the police's investigation was perfect, and it doesn't even necessarily mean that everything within these pages is truth. But regardless, the FBI have published 340 pages of official documents from the investigation into Heather's abduction, and that's what I've pulled from for this research. There's also findheatherteague.com, a community collaboration website into this case, and the people writing this website have a lot of differing opinions to the authorities. Heather's mum, Sarah, has said that she thinks the Kentucky State Police have been covering things up in this case, that all is not really as it seems. So all in all, I've had a lot of information to try and work through, to try to figure out how best to tell this story. And in the end, I've figured out the best way to tell it is just chronologically. Once I've told you a little bit about Heather, of course. Heather Teague was 23 years old in August 1995. She was 5'2" and petite, about 90 to 100 pounds, and was white with brown hair and green eyes. She did have scoliosis and had a very noticeable curve to her back, and being a scoliosis girly myself, I always feel this sense of unity with anyone else who suffers, and it's just those little tiny things that connect humans, that make you feel closer to others. And immediately when I read that Heather had scoliosis, I just felt this connection to her. Heather also had a circular red birthmark on her right buttock and had fallen arches or flat feet. As I said, she has been declared legally dead, but just in the small chance that she is still alive, I figured I'd mention these sort of like distinguishing features just in case. She was formerly a high school cheerleader and was homecoming queen, so she was a very popular person, always really full of life. Reportedly, in the couple of weeks before her disappearance, Heather had been a bit depressed, a bit down, but that's not thought to have had too much in connection with what happened to her, or at least it depends on who you ask. We all do tend to go through lower phases in life, and Heather was just in one of them. So, on the 26th of August, Heather decides to head to local Newburgh Beach in northeastern Henderson County for a day of sunbathing. Of course, Kentucky is a landlocked state, so this wasn't a proper beach on the ocean. It was, or is, this sandy area along the Ohio River. And looking at photos online, it seems like as good a place as any to chill by the water and catch some sun. And sort of like it went river, sand, and then backed on to woodland. It was a very popular spot for locals, for sunbathers, and for people driving all-terrain vehicles. From what I can gather, it was also an area where quite a lot of crime would happen, like you probably wouldn't want to hang out there after dark. There was lots of drug use, it seems, or even just bored teenagers causing trouble. But during the day, it should have been safe enough though. There were over 500 people on the beach that day.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair has got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
The area that Heather decided to set herself up in was slightly removed from the busiest part of the beach. She was about 500 feet away from the crowds, but she very much was still within eyeline of them and all the boaters as well. People should have seen what happened, and it was very unbelievable in the early days of the investigation that more people didn't come forward because there were so many people who could or should have seen. But one person did see, and that was a man called Tim. I'm not going to share his full name, but his name was Tim, and he was at his home in Newburgh, Indiana, about half a mile across the other side of the Ohio River. And you're probably wondering how somebody half a mile away saw what happened, but Tim had a telescope, and this telescope had 25 times magnification. And he just so happened to be scanning the beach that day, just watching it. Some sources say that he was a bird watcher, other sources say that he just liked to people watch, other sources say that perhaps his intentions were more nefarious. But regardless, he was watching the beach and specifically watching Heather, it seems. He watched the man came out from the woods and approached Heather from behind. And before she knew what was happening, she was lying face down sunbathing, he grabbed her by her long hair and showed her a gun. Some sources say that he then pulled her back into the woods through her hair, but I'm not entirely sure where that came from. Because in the 911 call that Tim made at 1:15 p.m, he says, scared of the gun, Heather stood up, covered herself with a towel because she was sunbathing topless, and then marched into the woods under duress. And that second option does seem more viable to me. Tim described this man as being white, 6 foot tall, 200 to 230 pounds, wearing blue jeans and no shirt. He appeared to have brown hair and a brown beard, but his face was fairly obscured, so we couldn't really make him out properly. He would later tell the 911 dispatcher that this man may have been wearing a wig or even mosquito netting on his head. I am unsure just how clearly the witness would have been able to see this scene through the telescope, like it was 25 times magnification, but he was also well over half a mile away. I am going to insert the audio from the 911 call here. It is originally 8 minutes long, but I'm going to try and sort of edit it down into something shorter, but I do think it's better to hear this from the horse's mouth.
State Police, Dispatcher Davis.
Yes, sir. I just called the Indiana State Police. I live in Newburgh, Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I was sitting at the dinner table. We got through eating dinner, and I got a telescope. I live right on the river.
Mm-hmm.
And I scanned the beach over straight across from the beach from the lock and dam.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a girl on the left-hand side of the trees down here, and she was sunbathing, and she was laying face down, and she had her top undone, and she was just bathing. And I was looking back and forth across the beach. I told Karen, I said, you know, I just listened to her. I said, I just looked at the beach. And about this time, a guy come running out of the trees on the left-hand side, and he ran down and grabbed her by the back of the head of the hair and jerked her up and she grabbed a towel, and he walked her up into the trees, up on, in the riverbank over here. Mm. And I've been watching now for 25 minutes, and I ain't seen her come back. And all of herself still sitting down here on the beach.
Where is she at on the beach, sir?
Now, I swear this guy looked like he had a gun. He come down, he had a chrome-plated, I could see it glistening in the sun. It looked like a revolver, and he snuck up behind her, and she was laying face down on the mat. And, she had long hair, and he grabbed her by the head of the hair and raised her head up and showed her the gun. And then when she did, she stood up, and she grabbed a towel that was laying there, and she put it on top of her, and he marched her in front of him right up to the top of the trees. He had what appeared to be like it was a chrome plating because it kept glistening in the sun. You know what I mean?
What's her stuff look like laying there on the beach?
She's got a lounge chair laying there, blue and white lounge chair, and her purse and stuff is laying to the left-hand side of it. And she picked her towel up with her when she left because she had it in front of her hiding her breast when she walked up the beach.
What'd her towel look like?
God, I don't know, a towel.
Light color, dark color?
Light color, kind of pinkish color, I think.
And where did he take her to?
There's the trees on the left-hand side, right up from where she was sunbathing. She was down this far end. He just walked.
So, as you can hear in the audio, Tim says that he waited and watched for 25 minutes before he called 911. He said he waited for the pair to come back, but after they didn't and all of Heather's stuff remained there, he decided that something bad must have happened. And this call has long been a frustration for everyone involved in this case, especially in the early days, because no one could understand why, having witnessed an abduction, Tim would wait 25 minutes before calling the police. For some, this makes him suspicious. For others, they could understand that maybe he didn't want to overreact. He said that he thought that maybe it was a boyfriend just playing a prank at first. Maybe he was in shock. I don't really know. But there are said to be some pretty big discrepancies with the 911 calls, discrepancies that have always caused confusion with the timeline in this case. It's said that Tim made two calls, according to findheatherteague.com, one to Kentucky State Police and another to the Indiana State Police. Apparently, he made a call to Kentucky State Police at 12 p.m, stating, "I just called the Indiana State Police." But according to FBI documents, he didn't actually make contact with Indiana until well over an hour later at 1:15 p.m. Now, Heather's family are insistent that they've heard these two different calls. All I can find online is a recording of the second call to Indiana State Police. If I'm being completely honest, I really still can't quite make sense of this whole call situation. I'm not entirely sure what call happened when. It is really, really unclear. Some people today are convinced that Tim had something to do with the abduction, but I'm just here to report the story as it happened and not make sort of blatant accusations, so I'm going to let you all make up your own minds as to whether or not Tim is actually suspicious. But it is thought that Heather was abducted not long before 1 p.m. on August 26th, 1995. I think it was a blessing in Heather's case that somebody did actually witness her abduction, at least if you believe that, because she did have a history of running away. Just a couple of weeks before this, she'd done so and was reported as missing by her family. When Heather was located by police after running away, she told them she'd just been running around. Had there been no witness to her abduction, there is every chance that when Heather didn't arrive home that night and her family tried to report her as missing, they would have just been brushed off, told that maybe she'd run away again. Maybe they would even have believed that, I'm not sure. But because this was witnessed, because the call came straight into the police, the disappearance was taken seriously right away. I just dread to think what might have happened in any other situation. We've seen families be brushed off time and time again, told adults have the right to disappear. But as far as anyone is aware, this abduction had nothing to do with Heather's past. It really does seem like she was abducted by a presumably opportunistic stranger who just saw her alone on the beach and decided to take her. At least that's what we can assume. With the report being made though, police arrived at the scene as quickly as possible. They found where Heather had been at the beach. They found the items that she'd left behind, including her clothes. Police followed footprints and a towel thought to be hers was found at the edge of the woods. And they also found part of her bikini nearby as well. Sources differ as to whether it was her top or her bottoms. But Heather herself was nowhere to be seen and her car was also found nearby, a red three-door Nissan hatchback. Her car was left near and there was nothing left in there of suspicion. Whilst the search was ongoing in the immediate hours after the abduction, a local man called James was listening to a police scanner when he heard all about what had just happened. And it just so happened that James had been right nearby the beach that afternoon after being paid by a local farmer to videotape cars in the area. Apparently, there was a little bit of a problem in the local area with beachgoers driving off-road vehicles through the farmers' fields. They crushed the crops, they left behind broken bottles, litter, drug paraphernalia, and just the night before, a car had damaged one farmer's corn crop. So the farmer paid this man called James to record all the cars driving through and see if they could catch the culprit. Apparently, they would still have corn under their bumper, which is just so rural, so countryside. So James that day drove around the field recording the passing cars and just so happened to capture Heather's as she drove into the area, parked up, got out and walked to the beach. He was supposed to stop filming around that point and he thought he had and he put the camera on his car's dashboard. But he just so happened to not turn the camera off, continuing to film for quite a while after, completely accidentally. So he had a lot of footage of the time Heather was abducted. You can see lots of cars coming and going, but you can't really see license plates or faces. It just wasn't really good quality. But one of the cars seen in the footage was a red and white Bronco parked on the opposite side of a gravel road to Heather's about 200 yards away. In an interview with the FBI, James's daughter, who was with him at the time, said that there was a man sat in that Bronco, a white male, approximately 25 to 30 years old, with a full beard and shaggy hair, which was incredibly similar to the description of the abductor that Tim gave.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
It seemed that they could confirm or at least deduce that the killer was driving a white and red Bronco. Another woman would also later come forward and say that she thinks she saw Heather after she was abducted. This woman was driving eastbound on Kentucky 811 when a car pulled up behind her from a road that comes from Newburgh Beach. It was around 2:30, 3 p.m. and in the car, a red Chevette apparently, she saw a woman struggling with a man. She doesn't know for sure that this definitely was Heather, but there was a resemblance, and she described the man as being sandy blonde with a beard, and he seemed just generally too big for the car that he was in. The car then turned back towards the river bottoms, and the witness didn't follow them to see what was going on, and it doesn't seem like this sighting has ever really been confirmed. Of course, in the days after the abduction, there was a full-scale search of this area. Divers came in, there were searches using police dogs, there was even a helicopter equipped with infrared sensors. But despite this, just 3 days in, the Courier-Journal reported there had been little progress in the search. A team of state and local investigators had used tracking dogs to comb the entire area, but they'd found nothing. Apparently the dogs could get Heather's scent at the beach, but as soon as they got to the front of the woods, it just disappeared. So investigators figured that Heather had been forced into a car around this point and just driven away. Through the local papers, authorities made requests for people to come forward with any information they had about this case, and they did receive sort of 6 to 8 tips from members of the public, all pointing towards one person, a 30-year-old man called Marvin Ray Dill. Marvin drove a red and white Bronco with a chrome luggage rack, very similar to the one seen at the beach that day. And in his driver's license photo from 1994, so just 1 year before, he very much matched the description of the white man with shaggy hair and a beard seen at the crime scene. But bear that fact in mind because we'll come back round to that in a bit, because of course, it's never quite that easy. When a composite sketch was made on the 30th of August from Tim's description, it was almost identical to Marvin Dill. But there were actually two sketches made, one through Tim's description and one from the daughter of James, who had seen the man inside the Bronco, and both were incredibly similar to Dill. Looking into this man, police found that he'd actually been arrested months beforehand. He was found to have 2 loaded handguns, rubber gloves, duct tape, and rope in his car. Things that very much could be used for nefarious purposes, or could be used in his job as a farmer. He'd been stopped and arrested by police at this point after local residents had made complaints of him cruising in his car and soliciting young girls for sex, at least according to the Messenger Inquirer. With his past criminal history, the fact that he matched the description, and the fact that a red and white Bronco was seen at the scene, on the 31st of August, they got a search warrant to search his residence, the surrounding property, and his vehicle. And what would happen over the coming hours would be pretty intense. Looking through the police documents, it does seem like on the same day, the 31st, somebody called the police and confirmed where Marvin Dill lived and the fact he definitely drove a red Bronco. This person told the police that he'd run his family off and was saying that if the police came to his home, a trailer, he was going to kill himself. And then around 3:30 p.m, it seems like somebody else who refused to identify themselves also called the police, and they said that they'd been told that Marvin's wife Tracy had been made to leave the home after she confronted him about the reports of a red and white Bronco at Heather's abduction scene. Reportedly, Marvin told her about this, that the less she knew the better, that he didn't want her to be involved in anything. He told her to take their child and leave. Again, he said that if the police came, he was going to kill himself. So the search warrant was executed in the early hours of September 1st, with police turning up at Dill's trailer around 2 a.m. He barricaded himself inside the trailer and threatened to end his own life, and there then seemed to be sort of like an ongoing negotiation between the police, him, and his uncle, who was also at the scene. He was told there wasn't an arrest warrant out for him, that this was just a search, but he did end up shooting himself, dying in the bathroom of his home. The gun, a 9mm handgun, was said to be very similar to the one seen by the witness during the abduction. At face value, this does all seem incredibly suspicious. Telling his wife the less she knew the better, making her leave the home, shooting himself rather than just speak to the police. But there is a little bit more context that I should share, context that seems to be left out of most coverage of this case. At the time of Heather's abduction, Marvin Dill should have technically been in jail. In the April of 1995, he'd been sentenced to 5 years in prison on a drug felony. However, he'd taken a plea bargain, meaning that he'd pled guilty in exchange for just 40 days in prison and then probation. Importantly, this was a drug charge, it wasn't a violent crime. He was just found with a load of marijuana plants. His probation officer described him as a real quiet kind of guy, just an unremarkable kind of person. Apparently, they had nothing to indicate that he was going to be harmful to himself or to anyone else. His only previous convictions were for harassment in 1993, disorderly conduct in 1985, and another charge later that year for marijuana possession. And none of them are technically violent crimes. However, a bit more context is probably needed for the harassment charge. This was for making obscene phone calls to a local woman, asking her if her deceased boyfriend was there, and then laughing before hanging up. Apparently, this harassment went on for about 3 months and just became increasingly perverted. The pair knew each other from high school, but like not very well, so the victim said it was all round very strange. She said that he would call her at work and at home, he'd call her after she'd been on dates and tell her where she'd been and what she was wearing. She said it was all very sexual, with Dill telling her things like he could hurt her if he wanted to. She said that she felt like this man needed serious therapy and a lot of help even back then. So whilst this wasn't technically a violent crime, maybe this could be an insight into his mind. But does this mean that he was guilty in Heather's case? Because there is a huge discrepancy that simply isn't reported on enough. Whilst the composite sketches, the description of the abductor does match Dill's 1994 driver's license almost weirdly perfectly, at the time of the crime, he actually had a shaved head. Whilst in jail in late spring, there had been a lice outbreak, meaning all the inmates had been shaved, both their heads and faces, and Marvin had kept this up. He didn't have shaggy hair at the time of the crime. There's photo evidence of him being relatively clean shaven on the 15th of July. However, we have got to bear in mind that Tim did speak about a possible wig or mosquito net around the head of the abductor, but the other witness did not. Sarah Teague has also since spoken out, saying that even the public information around Marvin Dill's death is wrong. She told the host of the TM podcast that she's read his autopsy and there was never any gun residue testing done on Dill's hands. She suspects that he didn't kill himself and that somebody snuck in through the back door of the trailer and killed him, or perhaps his own uncle did it, who was at the scene at the time. This obviously isn't what the official documents say, and I have nothing to say they're not true, but Sarah is the person who's done the most research into this case, more than anyone else. She is desperate in her hunt for justice for her daughter. It would be so easy for Sarah to blame her daughter's death on Marvin Dill. It would provide answers, closure. He wasn't a particularly innocent guy, but she is sure that he is innocent of her daughter's death. She thinks he is the victim of police corruption and a deep cover-up. After Dill's death, police continued with the search of his property anyway. Dogs were used to comb his residence and prosecutors compiled all the available evidence against him with the aim to bring it towards a grand jury, which they did in November of 1995. The Messenger Inquirer reported at the end of October, Kentucky State Police and Henderson County Commonwealth's attorney Bill Markwell said Friday no new suspects have surfaced and the grand jury proceeding was to force uncooperative witnesses to tell their story, because the people around Dill were staying pretty quiet and they wanted to be able to wrap up this case. Marvin's wife Tracy was called as a witness in front of this grand jury, but she invoked her Fifth Amendment rights and refused to answer a single question about the abduction. Again, something people have seen as very, very suspicious over the years, but Sarah Teague has said to The Messenger that whilst at the time this was traumatic for her, looking back she can see that Tracy was afraid and understands why she wouldn't talk. The Fifth Amendment is a constitutional right for citizens of the USA that protects them from self-incrimination by allowing them the right to silence. So when it's invoked, you do automatically kind of get the idea that somebody is hiding something, but people are allowed to use it, and who knows, maybe Tracy really was just scared. If her husband was innocent, maybe she was scared that her words would be twisted and just used against him. If he was guilty, well, then it's self-explanatory. Or maybe she didn't know either way. And it seems like the grand jury just didn't provide the answers, the solid clues they were looking for, because the investigation just continued.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
I can't tell you how often I hear, oh, I'm a little OCD. I like things neat. That's not OCD. I'm Howie Mandel, and I know this because I have OCD. Actual OCD causes relentless, unwanted thoughts. What if I did something terrible and forgot? What if I'm a bad person? Why am I thinking this terrible thing? It makes you question absolutely everything, and you'll do anything to feel better. OCD is debilitating, but it's also highly treatable with the right kind of therapy. Regular talk therapy doesn't cut it. OCD needs specialized therapy. That's why I want to tell you about NoCD. NoCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for OCD. Their licensed therapists provide specialized therapy virtually, and it's covered by insurance for over 155 million Americans. If you think you might be struggling with OCD, visit NoCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call and learn more. That's NoCD.com.
When investigators searched Dill's car after the death, they did find two small specks of blood inside, blood that they assumed belonged to Heather. The crime lab conducted a lot of testing on this blood, and after almost 9 months in June 1996, they concluded that one of the specks of blood was not Heather's and the other was too small for a definitive analysis. According to FBI documents from the same month, June 1996, all evidence continued to point towards Marvin Dill as the person who abducted Heather. The FBI joined the search by the end of August due to fears that Heather may have been taken across state lines, meaning that would be their jurisdiction, so the FBI were very much involved here. But a year passed with no answers. In that time, the Teague family organised multiple searches of the area, covering hundreds of miles, going in every direction to try and find just something. Over the years, there have been multiple rumours about Heather's disappearance, that she'd got too involved in the drug world and her death came on the back of that, that maybe she'd been run over, that this person and that person had been involved, that the night before her death she'd met with a Henderson police officer. But nothing came with finding her body. To this day, she's never been found, and the years just continue to pass. One decade after her disappearance, an FBI document reads that during this time frame, it was the accepted and logical belief by both the Kentucky State Police and the FBI that Dill had abducted, murdered Teague, and disposed of her body somewhere locally. The collected evidence was turned over to and maintained by KSP. However, KSP never forwarded the evidence to a lab to be analysed. The evidence in question being two head hairs and an animal hair recovered from Heather's towel found at the scene. It continues. After nearly 10 years, this matter remains unsolved. Although Dill appears to be the logical suspect, KSP is unable to provide the Teague family with undeniable proof that Heather Teague was abducted by Marvin Ray Dill Jr. Within the last several months, another person of interest has been developed. The name of said person is redacted in the file, a lot of the information has been redacted, but my research tells me that this second person of interest is a man called Christopher J. Bellow, a native of Henderson, Kentucky, and we know he was in the area on the day that Heather disappeared. So who was Christopher Bellow and how did he come to be connected to this case? By this point in time, he was already in prison in Ohio on a charge of involuntary manslaughter for the 1991 death of his lover, Catherine Fetzer, after she left a note for her husband saying she was going to the local mall and she never returned. Turns out the pair of them were having an affair and her car was found very near his house, although he originally denied any involvement in her disappearance. However, the police didn't believe this. They kept a very close eye on him over the next 12 years as he moved around from state to state. In autumn 2003, he was asked to come to the police station to talk about an unrelated case, at which time he was presented with new evidence in Catherine's case, at which point he confessed to shooting her. He was then extradited back to Ohio, where he made a plea deal for the lesser charge of manslaughter and was charged with 11 to 18 years in prison. Catherine's body has never been found. He was offered less time if he showed them to her body, but he refused, simply saying that she would never be found. He's known to have bragged to friends in the past about how he can get rid of bodies, and clearly, he can. On the back of these comments, detectives decided to start looking at some other cases that this guy could be responsible for, and they came across the name of Heather Teague. Especially interesting because Bellow was living just down the road in Henderson at the time. Catherine and Heather looked fairly similar. They both had this long dark hair. They both were very petite, around 5 foot and 100 pounds. And weirdly, on the day that Marvin Dill committed suicide, Christopher Bellow left Kentucky. It's also thought that him and Marvin Dill shared some acquaintances. They definitely would have run in very similar circles. And Heather's case isn't the only one potentially linked to Bellow. There's Mary Cushto, Charlene Farrell and Christina Porco's names also all linked to him. So could this be a man with a very dark history? Well, I would hope not because he is now out of prison. But is this enough to make the link to say that he was involved? In a WFIE online article from 2005, detectives say that apparently enhancement of the crime scene videos taken by James shows a man that he believes to be a clean-shaven Marvin Dill sitting in the driver's seat of the Bronco while somebody else appears to be ransacking Heather's car. Apparently, whilst the composite sketch of the perpetrator's head does look just like Marvin Dill, the torso sketch, a sketch of the torso sort of described by Tim, looks identical to Bellow. And I'm not quite sure how distinguishing a torso can be, but that's what they've said. But I also don't think the facial composite looks super different to Bellow though, like there's definitely similarities there. Although names have been redacted in the FBI document, it does look like in 2005, DNA swabs may have been taken from Bellow and forwarded to the Quantico lab for analysis. And I don't really know what came of this because as recently as 2022, Sarah has been fighting for proper DNA testing in this case, so I don't really think this went anywhere. Tim, the telescope witness, believes wholeheartedly that the man he saw that day is Marvin Dill. He said, "If I'm wrong, then I'm sorry for it. But when you see something like I saw and it's instilled in your memory banks, then you don't forget it. That is the individual, and there are certain things that I saw that lead me to believe it was the individual, Mr. Dill." There have been accusations over the years that he described the composite sketch from a photo of Marvin Dill, though, rather than from his memory. That police showed him a photo of the man they already had in mind, but Tim does dispute that. He says the abduction happened on the Saturday and the composite sketch was created on the Monday, and then 3 days after that, he was shown a photo of Marvin Dill. However, very interestingly, the FBI documents show the composite sketch was actually drawn on the Wednesday, not on the Monday, and the composite sketch looks exactly like Dill's driver's license photo, like it's uncanny, even down to shading on the cheeks. So take from that what you will. Maybe Tim's memory is a bit off, but 4 days does seem like a long time to wait before getting this sketch done. It's all very weird, or sketchy, if you pardon the pun. But also interestingly, despite his repeated claims that Dill was definitely the man he saw on the beach, he picked out Christopher Bello from a lineup 3 times in 2004. 3 times. Authorities do believe that they have circumstantial evidence to tie Bello to the crime, although they believe that he and Dill may have actually done it together. They think maybe one of them grabbed Heather and the other one drove the getaway car. And despite everything, they're still not really ready to let Dill go as a name involved here. And I do think the circumstances around his involvement are questionable, like the car, the red and white Bronco, the comments he made to people, the suicide. But there's also the fact that he was clean shaven at the time, and there's a complete lack of actual conclusive forensic evidence they've been able to find to link him.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
In the news this week, the Have I Got News For You podcast is back for another series.
Brought to you by some of the team behind the show, we'll take you through the big stories of the week when the TV show can't.
From Kemi Badenoch to Keir Starmer, Donald Trump to Nigel Farage, we'll make sure to give every story and subject the complete lack of respect it deserves.
We also cover all the sillier stories you've missed that don't make the front page and put your news knowledge to the test with our missing words round.
Listen and subscribe to In the News This Week, the Have I Got News For You podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
I think the police may have made connections to Dill very early on. They had this kind of like one-track mind with him and refused to look elsewhere. And then they doubled down when they realised they may have got the wrong man. I know Heather's family certainly thinks Christopher Bello is a much better suspect than Marvin Dill. But the point still stands, there's no actual evidence here. It's all circumstantial, pointing towards both men. Could Dill have done it? Maybe. Could Bello have done it? Maybe. Could they have done it together? Maybe. Could it have been somebody else entirely? Maybe. We don't know. In 2007, Sarah fought to get Heather declared legally dead in order to gain access to the FBI files. And then in February 2013, Sarah filed a lawsuit against local, state and federal authorities, alleging malfeasance and a cover-up in her daughter's case. She said that she wants the truth and she wants people to be held responsible, that the KSP failed to properly investigate all leads. But this lawsuit was tossed out just a couple of months later. She then filed another suit in 2016 after she claimed that she was denied access to chain of custody records for the 911 call, and she was awarded $24,000 when it was found the police had failed to release evidence when requested, and she did eventually get the recordings released. That is how I was able to include it in this video. And good news is that there are still movements being made in Heather's case to this very day. At the beginning of May 2024, so just 1 month ago, officials said that the Special Prosecutions Division of the Kentucky Attorney General's Office was going to go over the KSP investigation and handle any possible prosecution in this case. Hopefully, finally, after all these years, a set of fresh eyes will get to look over all the evidence from the very beginning. The KSP may have messed up at the beginning of this investigation, and maybe they've been trying to cover that up ever since. Maybe they had a one-track mind with Marvin Dill. Perhaps with a fresh set of eyes, an unbiased set of eyes, they will be able to uncover some more information, decide what the real truth is. Marvin Dill, Christopher Bellow, or someone else entirely. In January of this year, a reward was also donated anonymously to help find Heather, $10,000 for any information leading to her discovery or that of her killer. So there is still movement in this case, nearly 29 years on, and I have no doubt there will continue to be movement over the coming months. That's what happens when you've got a mum like Sarah Teague who is not willing to give up, who is going to fight to the bone for her daughter. Of course, finding the killer in this case, getting answers once and for all, is going to be great. Getting justice for Heather will be amazing. But the main thing her family want is to find her body, to be able to bring her home and give her a proper burial. I can't imagine how hard it is to not only deal with a murder case, but not even have a body, to always have those open-ended questions. Sarah has fought so hard for her daughter for so many years. She's made sure that no one has forgotten Heather. She has a lot of her own theories and opinions that she's been incredibly vocal about, and maybe she's not correct, or maybe she is, but hopefully with this fresh look at the case, some of her questions might finally be able to be answered, and I really, really, really hope for her that that is the case, because she deserves peace as much as Heather does. I just think about how lucky Heather is to have a mum who is so willing to fight for her, who is spending every waking moment of the last 29 years trying to get answers. Like, that is just truly incredible. Like, the love like that, it knows no bounds. And I already said it, but I just really, really hope that Sarah gets those answers, that all of Heather's loved ones get those answers that they so deserve, and Heather gets that chance to have a proper burial, to be brought home. Hopefully soon, with movement in this case, it is really going to happen. Thank you so much for tuning in today, and I will see you in the next one. Bye, guys.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.